Robin Hood Radio presents Agriculture from Tucana Farms. Here's Mark Scherzer.
One of the ways that small-scale agriculture differs from industrial-scale agricultural production, one of the features that people like Michael Pollan tell us make our model superior, is that the animals get to express their essential natures, the behaviors of their wild ancestors that they've retained despite decades of domestication and selective breeding. Thus, our turkeys, one might say, get to express what might be called their essential turkeyness. Instead of being confined to a large industrial-style shed where they are fed on some commercial nutrient mix until they reach the desired weight, ours roam free in the outdoors where they can choose to be in the sun or shade and can eat not only the grain provided for them, but also the diet of their ancestors, weeds and grass, insects, and such delicacies as apples. Instead of being forced to mill about in that shed all day and night like so many commuters on a crowded subway platform waiting for a train, they're free to congregate or wander off on their own as they wish, to create social groups and pecking orders, to display for each other and engage in amorous behavior, or to fight. Instead of being confined to the floor with no aerial perch, and instead of being burdened with industrial-engineered bodies that would prevent them in any event from getting off the ground, our turkeys are free and able to fly up to the barn roof, up to and over the deer fencing to the pastures, into the nearby apple, catalpa, and hickory trees, and onto the perching bars in their sleeping porch. Perching, rather than standing up, is the bird's natural sleeping posture. With their freedom comes the opportunity to create entertainments. Lately, we've enjoyed watching what appears to be the apple game. Though the trees are dropping apples like crazy, making for constantly available sweet snacks, we've observed a consistent practice of one turkey picking up a chunk of apple with its beak, and four or five others trying to snatch the chunk out of its mouth, chasing it around as if in a game akin to capture the flag or rugby. If the turkey drops the apple chunk, one of the others engaged in this game will pick it up, and its playmates will then start chasing that one. The object does not seem primarily about eating the apple. There are, after all, hundreds of other pieces of apple available to be munched on all around them, but rather about the challenge of keeping dominion over the selected fragment. In fact, last weekend, as I was driving the turkeys into their sleeping porch for the night, there was one such game going on among the stream of turkeys heading inside. The very last one in for the night was the one with the apple fragment in its beak. It seemed it had been holding back to retain the prize and to march in demonstrating its triumphant win. Despite the aggressive behavior and fights that sometimes seem to characterize the establishment of their social hierarchy, the turkeys generally seem a happy bunch, and in some ways a model for human society. Unlike human society, they seem oblivious to color differences. We have, in equal numbers, black, white, and brown breeds, as well as the complex variegated gray, white, and black coloration of the Narragansetts. They fully socialize and consort across those color boundaries. The birds also have a considerable range in size. This year, for the first time in the last 17, we have a dwarf, a Spanish black hen about a fifth the size of most of the other birds. She seems to grow not at all, and because of her short legs is always bringing up the rear of any group she's in. She will end up the ideal bird for a one or two person Thanksgiving feast, perhaps 3 pounds at the most. Yet despite her decidedly off-the-chart size, she is not picked on or excluded, but is fully integrated in the activities of the group. While we might generally admire their tolerance for diversity, those with 21st century sensibilities would likely be horrified by one aspect of the turkey social order: their treatment of the disabled. Turkeys with neurological disorders or other discernible physical impairments are absolutely discriminated against in the most horrible way. If they are perceived as so impaired, they're likely to be pecked to death by the rest of the group. There seems to be little doubt that this is an instinctive behavior. Our turkeys are incubator hatched and not raised by adult parents from whom they might learn to behave this way. Yet year after year, a flock that was all hatched on the same day goes after other turkeys that are perceived as impaired. The trigger is also quite obviously not that the bird is considered different. For example, turkeys do not similarly attack chickens or ducks that they encounter, but rather that it's clearly a member of the same species that has a disturbing abnormality. We don't yet fully understand the threshold at which turkeys perceive the abnormality as warranting attack. We've seen some birds over the years with minor lameness who learn to mask their disability and move similarly enough to the rest of the group to blend in and avoid attack. But this year, we've seen that the trigger for the attack can be a pretty small one. A couple of weeks ago, during afternoon chores, our helper Daniel found a lovely Holland White turkey hen who had gotten her foot caught in the crook of an apple tree branch and was dangling helplessly upside down by that foot, which she had clearly broken in the effort to free herself. Since her foot was only hanging by the skin, Daniel and Peter had no choice but to amputate it. It healed up nicely and quickly, but left her with a right leg about an inch shorter than the left. She has what I would call a fairly inconspicuous limp. Yet when after a few days of healing we tried to integrate her into the flock, she was immediately set upon by the flock and had to be rescued. We tried again in succeeding days, and even though to human eyes she seemed quite ambulatory, with only a slight asymmetry in her movement, that was enough to trigger fresh attacks. Clearly, adaptive mechanisms like crutches, access ramps, and the like, which we humans have developed to help integrate disabled people into our society, would have not much place in turkey society. This vigorous response of the turkeys to abnormality may be highly useful from an evolutionary or group health perspective, by eliminating sick birds from the flock or preventing those with congenital defects from reproducing. That human society has such greater tolerance for disability, although we need disability discrimination laws to enforce that tolerance, may be one way in which we are distinguished in a positive way from other animals. But what do we do with the collision between our human values and those of our turkeys? We've now repeatedly saved this bird and kept her safe by housing her in an enclosed brooder room by night, adjacent to the turkey's sleeping porch but separated by mesh netting. When the turkeys vacate their sleeping porch in the morning, we moved her in there alone. But she was intensely lonely, and we knew she would not thrive as a flock member separated from her flock. We debated whether, if we really wanted to let our turkeys express their true essential turkeyness, we shouldn't let the group take its collective will against her. After all, sacrificing the lives of some individuals for the overall benefit of the larger group is how turkey society protects the general welfare. Maybe, if our lonely turkey were able to speak, she would have expressed her preference to submit to the group's will in just that way, rather than to be kept alive in isolation. Luckily, it seems we may be spared further debate on the subject. In the last couple of days, Daniel once again placed her back with the flock, and she seems to have recovered enough now to move around with them without being harassed in any way. If she's been fully accepted once again, it will be a great relief, as we will no longer have to worry about reconciling the turkey's instincts with our concept of what's humane.
Peter Davies and his partner Mark Scherzer are proprietors of Tricana Farm, specializing in heritage breeds of livestock on their 40-acre farm in Germantown, New York. Peter also presides over Tricana Odyssey, in which he customizes cultural tours of turkey for small groups, which he calls an insider's view of turkey. And his third hat is Tricana Gallery of Old and Antique Killams, which he operates in the Wall Street area of Manhattan. Mark presides over his law firm, Mark Scherzer Law Office, which specializes in health law, also in the Wall Street area. Their farm website? TurkanaFarms.com. Their email, farm@TurkanaFarms.com, or 518-537-3815.